Hello everybody, welcome and kumusta. Thank you for joining me. This is How Your Occupational Therapist. And welcome to Occupational Therapy Conversations. In this episode of OT Conversations, I'd like us to have a discussion about rib fractures. That's right, rib fractures. It is one of the most common type of chest injury. And let's have a short discussion about that. What are rib fractures? So you obviously know what ribs are. A rib fracture is a fracture of the rib, obviously. And what happened here is that there is a break or there is a crack on either one or more of the bones or the rib bone that make up the rib cage. And these bones, they have purpose, obviously. But primarily, the purpose is to protect the heart, the lungs, and other organs in the chest. Isn't it amazing? It's just a wonderful design. So there's this rib cage. It's there. The sole function of this is to protect whatever is inside. It's wonderful. And it happens that the ribs break. And what are the causes for this? Number one would be trauma. There could be either a blunt trauma when somebody falls down or when there is an accident, road traffic accident, sports injuries, for example. So anything traumatic. Would you believe it that cuffing can potentially break the ribs as well? So yes, cuffing is a potential cause of a rib fracture, particularly a severe cuff or prolonged cuffing. And this is not very typical, but this is common on elderly patients, particularly those who has osteoporosis. The next reason or one of the potential causes of fracture could be a repetitive motion in athletes, for example, rowers, golfers. So that can potentially cause a rib fracture. Although I am not very familiar, I have not looked into the details about this, but yes, it can happen. And there are some where it can be a pathological fracture, particularly when the bones weaken because they have conditions like, one, osteoporosis, or cancer, unfortunately. So yes, those are the causes of a rib fracture. Now, what are the symptoms? How do we know when somebody's had a rib fracture? One of the main symptoms would be a sharp pain in the chest or on the side. And these sharp pains, they get worse when people do some deep breathing or when they are coughing or when they are sneezing or when there is a movement that causes pressure as well. And that's what's happening. So sometimes patients would come into the doctors and they would say it is very painful, particularly when they're breathing in. And then it's all about history taking. And then what happened? Has there been an injury? Things like that. And this sharp pain that causes when somebody takes in a deep breath, for example, when they cough or when they move, this then leads to a patient doing some shallow breathing, because they don't want the chest to expand so much. So they will do shallow breathing. And when somebody just has this shallow breathing, it can lead to some complications. Pneumonia can be one of them. And what else? What are the symptoms? There can be bruising or there can be swelling over the affected area as well. So that's one. Or there could be a crepitus, which is a crunching sound. And that is a feeling from when the bones rub each other. I'm sniggering because I can almost feel it. So how does one establish a rib fracture? So obviously clinical examination. There's going to be some tenderness over the rib. There's going to be pain, particularly when they're inhaling or during inspiration. And the most efficient way and the most scientific way of establishing whether one has a rib fracture is through imaging. Obviously, you can have chest x-ray, imaging through chest x-ray. But the thing with chest x-ray is that it may miss a small or non-displaced fracture. So somebody's got to have a very keen eye on the x-rays. Somebody's got to be an expert in looking at this. And then a CT scan is something that people can do as well. And this is more sensitive and it shows some complications like lung contusion or some pneumothorax as well. Much more expensive scanning, but then in NHS it's free. It's the call of the doctor at the end of the day. And it can be diagnosed through ultrasound and it can detect fractures that are not seen by x-ray. Now, let's talk about the potential complications. What are the potential complications when somebody's had a rib fracture? Some complications could mean that somebody can have pneumothorax, where there's an air in the thoracic space. So and it can lead to a collapsed lung. You can have a hemothorax. And here there's an accumulation of blood in the chest cavity. Or you can have pulmonary contusion, which is a bruised lung. And the other one, which is very painful, a flail chest. And in flail chest, there is a segment of the rib that's broken. If these ribs gets broken into multiple places, it can cause a part of the chest wall to move paradoxically, and it can have a flail chest. Ouch, that's all I can say. And obviously pneumonia can happen when somebody just does lots of shallow breathing. All right, easy, straightforward. We've spoken about some of the symptoms, ways on how to diagnose it. Although it's not our duty to diagnose it as therapists, but it's always good to know. Okay, now we are on to treatment. Most rib fractures are treated conservatively. Yes, and the reason why I'm saying this and what prompted me to do this episode is I just remembered at some point, and there was a puzzle in my university days, and some of the teachers, our professors, were asking, or one of the professors asked us about how do you splint a rib fracture? How do you put a cast on that? And then everybody was just like thinking and thinking. And then you don't. The answer was actually no, you don't. If there are no injuries, then it is treated conservatively. The one thing that somebody need to have a control of is the pain. So pain management is one. And what are the things that people get given? They get given paracetamol, non-steroidal, anti-inflammatory drugs or NSAIDs, opioids if it is severe. And then there can be some intercostal nerve blocks and or lidocaine patches for localized pain. So just to let you know, guys, the Latin for rib is costo, okay? COSTO. That's the Latin. So intercostal nerve blocks, which means that there would be a nerve block in between the ribs. So either through patches, right? So pain management is number one. That's very important. The next treatment and intervention would be breathing exercises. Although the person can breathe, the problem here is that the pain can be so bad that the patient may not want to do any deep breathing. So deep breathing and incentive spirometry is actually given, and that's good to know. In practice, I don't know. That's the area of the physical therapist, and I don't meddle with physio's intervention. They should be doing it, but it's up to them. There are protocols that people do. They would say there's no evidence. They'd say there's evidence, but different centers, they do that. Think in healthcare where it's paid for by insurances, that's something that people would do because anything you do matters, has an outcome, and you can start billing the insurance companies. But then in NHS, I don't know if this is a thing. So deep breathing and incentive spirometry, yeah, that is something. So pain management, breathing exercises. Now, the other thing that needs to happen when somebody's had this is that we should start thinking about activity modification, particularly with rest, and early gentle mobilization is encouraged. You have to start moving, but to the level that you can tolerate. Yeah. If it is too bad, then a person may need to be hospitalized. If they have multiple fractures, if there is a flailed chest, or if there are any underlying cardiac or lung injury, and if the pain is just too bad. Technically, if you know that you've had a rib fracture, it is likely that the person would have gone to A&E. Yeah. And after the x-rays, they'll go and decide whether to admit the person or not. If the pain is too bad, they might admit the person. If the injury is too bad, flail chest, multiple fractures, yes, they have to make sure that it's safe. But at the end of the day, pain management. After pain management through medication, learn the deep breathing exercises. Yeah. So when doing moving and handling, just remember this: rib belts or tight binding, they are not routinely recommended because they can restrict breathing and they can increase the risk of pneumonia. Now, what are some of the special considerations about these rib fractures? Elderly people, they are at higher risk of some complications. They will have more time. They would need more time to heal, and there is often a more need for pain management. So it's a more aggressive pain management, but that's just generalizing it. At the end of the day, it's the person. It just depends. Some people have higher, lesser pain threshold. It just really varies. Special considerations are also and should also be given to children. But just remember that children, they have more flexible ribs and that they're less likely to fracture those ribs. But if there is a blunt injury, there can be an underlying injury, and that is common. So what's the healing time when it comes to hip fractures? Oh, I keep on saying hip fracture. I don't know why, guys. What's the healing time when it comes to rib fracture? It's about 6 weeks for an uncomplicated rib fracture. fracture. And that you must remember that full activity, like the sports heavy lifting, should be resumed only when the person is pain-free and after clearances. One, from doctors, physical therapists should be able to give these clearances as well, because it's a physical problem, isn't it? Now, that's that. That's rib fracture. What else? What else? Now, talking about occupational therapy, right? So you can tell that I very seldom talk about rib fractures. I just know that it happens, and when it happens, you don't have to do anything unless there's an injury underneath. And it, again, if there is an injury, it's going to be a medical intervention. Any pain medication and pain management has to be a physical therapist. But the question for us is, what is the functional implications? So for occupational therapists, the implication for this, there are significant implications to OT, especially in terms of the functional recovery of our patients. Pain management, something, we can do something about that. The non-pharmacological interventions, you can do relaxation, you can do self-hypnosis. And we can start educating the person so that we can prevent the complications like pneumonia, for example, or the conditioning. So when it comes to occupational therapy, just remember, pain is the main star. The patient is the star, but what's the problem? What's the implication? What's causing all the problems? What are the contexts that affects a person's engagement? That would be pain. And that would cause activity limitation. So a person can have pain on movement. They can have pain when they're breathing, when they're coughing, when they're lying down. And again, this will lead to restricted activity. Then clients and patients may also avoid essential activities, the very basic ones like personal care, dressing, even toileting, because somebody had to twist, and when that happens, that's going to be so painful. So for an occupational therapist, the role would be to teach a pain minimization strategy. Yeah, the objective is to be able to engage on activities, personal care activities, with less pain. Yeah, and you can actually teach some pacing and energy conservation, and you can teach some positioning support for sleep and rest, okay? And pain and difficulty, pain and difficulty. So this will be a parameter of quality in terms of performance. I don't know whether you remember, the parameters of assessment and intervention involves the value, how the task is valuable to a person, the parameter of independence, the parameter of safety, and the parameter of adequacy and quality of performance. So this means, and what is the measure for quality of performance? One is ease, difficulty, presence or absence of fatigue, presence and absence of pain. All right. So a problem in dressing can mean the person can put on the clothes, but with difficulty because of pain. So your objective then would be the patient will be able to put on the clothes with less difficulty and with less pain. How do you want to do that? If you're not giving the tablets, you can teach them some modified techniques on how to dress. Yeah, you have to avoid those twisting movements, but that depends on which rib or which part, whether the left side, the right side. That would be the intervention. So modify intervention is the technique in here. So you do modify intervention or preventative intervention to prevent pain. And then for an elderly person, if they really can't do it, you and we may have to revert to using a supportive intervention, meaning we may have to get carers in. All right, so that's the role. Now, when it comes to respiratory function and the risk of pulmonary complications, yeah, just remember that shallow breathing and immobility can increase the risk of atelectasis, which is the lung collapse, and the pneumonia. And in here, the role would be, what would be our role? Yes, be a team player. Collaborate with the physiotherapist. And what we want to do is we want to promote upright positioning. We want to promote breathing exercises. And we want to promote thoracic expansion. And we would like to support participation in gradual mobility to facilitate lung ventilation. So you see, there is a science in activities. You do something to get them to do the things, but then scientifically, why do you want to do this? To promote lung ventilation, all right? Primarily, we look at problems with ADLs, but there is an underlying medical reason, which is, again, the promotion of lung ventilation. We can also educate on the environmental setup, and this environmental setup and home adaptations can reduce the strain during recovery. Now, let's talk about the impact on self-care and functional mobility. That's very easy. The pain. What can be the impact of this? So, movement, particularly those movements that involve reaching, will be difficult. Those movement that involves bending will be difficult. Those movement that involves twisting can be very painful. All right? Very logical and very, it seems so obvious, doesn't it? But when you look at them putting on the socks, that's going to be difficult. How are you going to do that? If they're bending over, teach them to cross the legs. That is a modify intervention. All right. If they have difficulty with shoes, for example, use a sock aid. Oh, no, sock aid, like long shoehorn, so they don't twist. That in an encouragement to maintain their medication routine, because being on top of their pain medication can also help. So they would have difficulty with reaching, bending, twisting. People and patients may have difficulty with upper body dressing, particularly for women when they have to put on the bra or the pullovers. Ah, yes. How do you put on those clothes without having to lift your arms? So you can either don it on the arms first and then onto the head. But imagine putting it on the head first and then the arms last. So there would be much more movement for the arms. Or you can do it just like a triangular shape of dressing where you put it on the one arm and then on the head and then on the other arm. Okay, remember to clothe and put on the clothes on the side where it's painful first. If it's one-sided, if it is both-sided, then that's going to be very challenging. Showering will be a bit tricky. Ouch, I can almost feel it. Hair washing, how are you going to do this? I have no direct solution to recommend, because it is an individual scenario and you have to look at the problem, you have to analyze the movements, and then you have to find out ways on how to do it. Can the person, I don't know, use a jug with long handle but then lifting can be difficult? Again, there's so many factors, right? I can say that the person may have difficulty lifting, yes, but probably the person may not. So it just varies, right? Getting in and out of bed would be something that can be difficult for the patient. On and off the chair, on and off the vehicle, the car. So you have to have almost like a lug rolling rather than segmental rolling. I'm always almost sniggering because I can almost feel the pain. I can almost imagine it. So what do we do as OT? Obviously, our duty would be to identify problems. So we have duties in assessment, problem and discharge planning, goal identification, and rehab planning. And then we have intervention. So when it comes to assessment, we have to assess and we have to adapt the ADLs with assistive devices if required. So you can be utilizing a modified intervention here. And then we may have to do some modified dressing techniques. Again, it's a modified intervention. And this would have been a functional retraining. So ADL retraining, what style, modify. You can do, as OTs, we are concerned about environmental and home safety, and that the patients may be fearful of falling, understandably. False prevention. It's bad enough that they fell down. Yeah, we have to make sure that it doesn't happen again. Ouch! Because the worst thing that can happen is somebody falls down, broke their ribs, started walking, and oh my, dearie me, they fall down again on that rib and they're holding onto a walking frame. Oh my goodness, that's going to be so painful. So we need to assess for home hazards, especially around the bathroom and the bedroom. And we can educate them with regard to safe mobility, but do in a way that you're really just having a discussion with the patient so that the patient themselves will know what to do, okay? Don't be patronizing while just talking to them like they are kids and they're all grown up, assuming that you are in an adult practice, right? So educate on safe mobility, falls prevention, emergency planning. Other roles involves roles that will affect the person's mental health and psychosocial impact of this. So again, pain and immobility can contribute to anxiety, fear of re-injury, or loss of independence. Then there's going to be a lot of supportive OT in here. Supportive conversation, motivational interviewing, rational emotive approaches, cognitive approaches, cognitive behavioral strategies. These are all some of the frames of references and approaches on how we deal with this. So with OT, provide supportive listening and reassurances. Isn't that great? You provide supportive conversation, and that's billable. You can charge the insurance company. Yeah, because we are special that there is psychology in our training. Yeah. So you can sit down and listen to the person. And when you do, you can empower them little by little. Not to be prescriptive, but wait for that right time. Supportive listening and reassurances. We need to facilitate engagement in meaningful, low-impact activities so that we can support the morale and so that the person can go back to their routine. All right. And you can, and we can support on goal setting for recovery and return on their previous roles. We also have a role in helping out the person go back to work, driving, and leisure activities. Would you believe that? Yeah, vocational rehab, it's one. So driving, lifting, performing work-related tasks may be restricted for weeks. So what do? So we evaluate the functional capacity and their readiness to return to work. Now, I'm talking to you about these things, and these are some of the expectations for occupational therapists in other countries, right? So we can, when a person is ready and fit to go back to work, occupational therapists should be able to do this. We need to be able to do this. We can. We should be. We have to have that skill. Don't lose it, guys. Occupation. Return to work. Yes, we can tell when a person is suitable to go back to work. All right. Not the occupational health. Yes, occupational health. It's there. In the country, it is there. You know what's sad? You know, there's not a lot of OTs. There's not an OT in occupational health. It's ran by nurses. There's even physios in there, but not occupational therapy, for crying out. Anyways, I'm beginning to rant. Never mind. So going back, we have to grade activities for the patients so that they can build up their endurance and their confidence. Again, we can always justify these things, especially if we know how to build the patients. But then again, NHS is free, and so therefore, probably there's no need to keep the patient in. Let the patient go home, and people will sort themselves out. Just give them advice, right? We can, as a proper occupational therapist, collaborate with the employers or the educate for temporary accommodations of the problems. Right? All right, let's just give an area of focus and the summary of some of the interventions. Pain management, right? And so with regards to pain management, we can have activity adaptations, breathing techniques, we can have pacing. When it comes to ADLs, you can have assistive devices or task modification. When it comes to respiratory support, we can aid on positioning, mobility encouragement, breathing coordination. Tie up with the physios about this, all right? When it comes to the environment, home safety assessment is one. Provision of adaptive equipment. We can have some recommendations about the home environment. On some of the psychosocial support, we can do emotional support. We can provide meaningful occupations and engagement. When it comes to work and leisure, then it's functional assessment. We can use graded return to work plan. And that would have been, what's that thing called in the United Kingdom? Based return. Is that right? Is that what you call it? I can't remember. I'm recording this late at night and I'm a little bit woozy now. But anyways, guys, there you go. I hope you learned a little something about rib fracture, which is an interesting type of fracture, isn't it? You would think that there's nothing you can do as occupational therapist. You're wrong. There are things that you can do. If you enjoy this talk and you learned a little something, talk to your friends about it, right? Talk to your friends about the topic over a cup of tea. Learn together and grow together. Just remember, guys, anything you do matters and has an outcome. My name is Hao. This is OT Conversations. Look it up on all the platforms where you can find your podcast. I have to say it. Like, share, subscribe. Do what you can to appease the algorithm. Until next time, guys. Bye.